Oh, do we need to balance that again? Where's our, is he working on, okay. Wow. The power that I have in my voice. God is speaking now. Is the mic need to be moved? Checking. Oh, this one. I could use that mic too, because that's a beautiful sounding. Maybe I'll just use that. Yeah. I'm going to turn this off, and I'm going to use the... It'll record? Okay. Okay. Oh, that's much better, yes? Good. Anyway, just my thought is that, you know, if we do have that sense of not enough, which might be, you know, working against our intention to let go, to release, to be willing to not know, then there's work that has to be done, you know, sort of to lessen that. And we can do that. I mean, it's work of bringing the shadow into the light, bringing awareness. And once you're, you know, once you're aware of something, then you can see it for what it is when it arises and not give it much credence, as much credence, and it has less effect on you. And it moves when, you know, what's the opposite of being a being of God? What's the opposite of that? That you're just a little individual with, you know, limited resources and limited capacity and limited potential, and not knowing from as an inferior aspect of being. So that works against our spiritual life, right? And what works towards our spiritual understanding is getting rid of what's not true, yeah? Because if we want to move more into truth, we have to not just work at the level of studying the truth, but we have to also expose that which is not true, which we are believing. Does that make sense? So what are you making true that's not fundamentally true, but lives as a core belief in your unconscious or your subconscious mind that then pretends to give you a picture of reality, but really only tells you more about who you are not who you are? So my wife and I are very excited about something called the Q process, the art and practice of living with nobody and nothing against you. The Q process, and it's a spiritual technology that involves bringing into light what we have come to believe that's not true, and then working with that in a way to lessen that as a belief system, and then have the other side of the card, so to speak, being who you have come here to be, you know, this beautiful child of God that you are, and with all of those wonderful attributes that all of us have come here to express, and to work concurrently with bringing forth that true being and exposing and reducing the influence of who you are not, who you've been believing yourself to be, and seeing through that. So if you're interested in more about the Q process, I'll be glad to talk to you later about that. Any questions, comments, thoughts, concerns? St. Patrick's Day jokes? Irish. I looked for a good Irish joke, and all of them were very disparaging to the Irish people. So I couldn't find one that wasn't, you know, just really not nice. I think I went through 20 jokes, and I thought, you know, they were funny if you really want to be, you know, cast aspersions upon the Irish. But other than that, I didn't find any good ones. So, anyone got one? We got time. You got one?
No. But I wanted to share, as you were talking, what kept coming to me is the cloud of unknowing. And I was wondering if you want to tell us a little bit how meditation works in the process of unknowing and letting go. And Thomas Keating said, it is not what's happening while you're meditating. It's what happens in your daily life after meditating, the sudden insights, which to me reminds me of what you just said. Because we let go in meditation, we have insights when we least expect them. And often that's when solutions to real life problems come to us, and that we had not even thought of through the rational mind, you know. So I don't know if you want to speak about that.
Well, that's, you just really wrapped it up really nicely. I mean, that is, I mean, that's just it. It's like you say, it's very true. For me, I think meditation has become, I guess I would call it consciousness conditioning. You know, like with conditioner you put on your hair, you know, it's like conditioning the consciousness to be more open and receptive rather than it be clouded with lots of thoughts. There is just the pureness of consciousness which can be exposed when you meditate and you use meditation as an opportunity to see what comes and what goes. You know, like if you think of the mind as being like the clear expanse of sky, and that everything that comes into conscious awareness, like the clouds, that they come and they go, and the feelings, they come and they go, and the sensations in the body, they come and they go, but what remains is you, is this being, is this awareness, which is unclouded, which is infinite, which never is limited by the clouds that come and go. So to me, that to me has been most useful, because when you have that experience in meditation, then you carry the residual of that into your life, right? And that there is this capacity then that you can step back from life circumstances and be more in the context of how this life's event is arising, as opposed to being stuck in the event and the circumstance itself and identified with that as a particular object in the subjective awareness that you are. So meditation then becomes a way of, like, you know, like you're seeing one of these films where they focused on a flower in a field, and then the camera zooms out, and then it's, you know, and then it's the grass in which the flower sits, and then it's the whole park of where the grass is, and then it's the whole city, and then it goes out and out and out and out and farther out into this much vaster perspective. And now you can just barely even see the flower, and you're much more aware of the context in which the flower exists, and that's much more of your essential reality than the flower. And so, you know, the metaphor being, if the flower is a circumstance or a situation or a person in your life that feels like you've identified with a situation or a problem or an individual's, you know, how you respond to that individual, then the context of your greater self becomes a perspective where that the effect of that individual or that situation can be reduced, where you then have, you know, like Christiane was saying, you have new ideas of how to respond to it. Not just that single response when you're completely focused on that situation or that problem, where there is no perspective. There only seems to be you in that situation, and that is all. And you don't see any space around it, and so you don't see any wiggle room around it. You don't see any opportunities to have a creative solution around it. Does that make sense? So it's about increasing the context, which meditation does, because the mind is vast and unlimited. The aware mind, not the brain I'm not talking about, but the awareness, like I was saying, our essential nature is unbounded, unlimited. Yeah. Any other thoughts or questions? Yes, sir.
You don't mind, I'm going to stand here. There we are. Okay. I'd like to bring up a little different aspect of the realizing you don't know and what the not knowing means. In my own case, a loss of sight, and then over the years dealing with people with traumatic losses, when you don't come to the realization I don't know, it's taken away. You know, the trauma, whatever it is, takes out your identity. I found that all my identity was external. And the things I thought I knew and thought I had figured out It's all gone. So then where do you go? And I found for myself, initially, you're just numb.
Yes.
Don't know what to do. And gradually, this ability to move out, to trust.
Yeah.
And probably the biggest, I guess, indication for me is when people can stop asking why. Why did this happen to me? Mm. And when you can trust and reach out and let go, the why just disappears. It doesn't matter. Because to ask why is, to me, focusing totally on self, not being open, not looking in the bottom of the cup. Because what happened to the cup? But anyway, I just thought I'd give a little different take sometimes on not knowing.
Thank you, Keith. That was really says it profoundly well, because, you know, it's when life really does take something really precious away from you that these teachings, you know, get the litmus test of what is the ability to turn the darkness into the light. And that's just a beautiful demonstration. I think that one of the hardest things as a spiritual counselor too is when people come and they've had a tremendous loss in their life and they ask that question, why? You know, because I think our spiritual search so much has to do with meaning making. You know, we're wanting to make sense. We want meaning. And if we can put it in a context of meaning, then somehow we feel we can accept what's happened to us in life. That, you know, given a, you know, if we knew that we were on some heroic journey, that this particular loss was part of our task, you know, by some great and lofty mission. Or that there was some boon at the other end of it, that there was some great grand reward for our sacrifice, that somehow we would be okay with it, or it would sting less and it would have some sense of it being much more important, and that we were glad to play our part in something grander than our own personal sense of loss. And I don't know that... I don't know those stories. But there's one story, and that's what you just described, which is that when you stop asking why has this happened to me, you then make yourself a candidate for reframing the situation into something that can create the meaning that is good.
I'd like you, if you would be so good, as to talk more about the Q process and how you said at Unity Church for counseling.
Thanks. It is something that it's hard to give you a short understanding of it. It's an all-day Saturday workshop, and then it has 6 hours of follow-up sessions and a 21-day practice of working with situations in our life. It's actually brought in by, it's not Unity Santa Barbara sponsors these workshops, but it isn't really like officially our own work. It is Denise actually been trained in, my wife Denise, who's a certified Q facilitator. And it's a combination of quantum physics, neuroscience, and depth psychology, shadow work, really a beautiful synthesis of all these things. And I can, if you're interested, I could send you to the website. Now, in fact, if you just Google the Q effect, Q-E-F-F-E-C-T, okay. That's what we do today. And you can go to their website, and it'll have a lot of information and little videos and things about it. And then we offer it about every quarter. Well, I think our next one is April 23rd. It's a Saturday. And we don't have it on our website yet, but we will have it up shortly. But anyway, it's just, I'm not trying to, you know, promote it. It's just that it's been so important in my life and in my wife and the people. We've had about 75 people in our community go through it. And for some of them, it's been absolutely, I mean, life-changing that they've dealt with the same issues for 60 or 70 years, and now just seeing how a limiting idea or belief was really creating their reality and their suffering. And so it's powerful. Yeah, well, in my case, it's oh, the question was, could you give an example of how that's happened? So I'll just give my own, which is right and fair. For me, the story that was always coming up was not good enough. And it could take on lots of different disguises, yeah? And but recognizing that it was just, when it comes up, that it's just another version of not good enough, was enough for me to be able to say, when it arises for me now, say, that's just this story that I have about not being good enough. I know that that's not true. Fundamentally, that's not true. Because part of the cue process is, in the beginning, you get in touch with who you've come here to be. So you start with the positive. You start with the people and the qualities that you most admire of people in the world. And so you create this, what they call the cue card. And you start out by saying, this is who I have come here to be. So you establish your true self and how your true self expresses in the world. The other side then becomes the shadow side, backside of the card. And that's all the things that trigger you. And so you then identify these shadow beliefs. So then you have these worksheets in which, when you get triggered by something, some external trigger or some internal trigger, then you kind of walk through the experience of saying, when such and such happened, I felt such and such. And then you go and you look at your cue card and say, had I been on my cue card, in other words, had I been, you know, coming from a place of confidence, for me it's confidence, it's compassion, it's humorous, it's clarity, there's various qualities I see myself as. Had I been coming from that, would I have had this experience? No. What was triggered in the process? And then I identify those shadow beliefs that were triggered. And so then I realized that, okay, those shadow beliefs is what came to give me my experience. So I was not reacting to who I was reacting from who I'm not, which are these shadow beliefs. And then you go into this process, which is this is what we would call the field of infinite possibilities. That realize that at any given moment, no matter what the trigger is, if you are not hooked by a shadow belief, then you see all kinds of ways of interpreting a story, all kinds of ways of seeing what that person did and why they did what they did and how you could respond to that from an infinite, you know, field of possibilities. But if you're hooked into a shadow belief, then you only have one response, which is to be diminished by that situation. So it is this place of clarity and insight that offers up a new field of possibility. And when you become practiced at this, then when those moments come, you can still feel the trigger, but then you realize that the trigger is a false alarm and that there is still this field of infinite possibilities coming from who you really are, in which how you can respond to the situation. So this has been powerful for me. I work in a community of about 200 people. There's all kinds of opportunities to interact with people all the time. All kinds of opportunities for my I'm not good enough shadow belief to get triggered, right? Because people are openly critical or they're not happy or, you know, what for whatever reason. So, but I'm realizing that less and less am I being triggered in the same way. And if I am triggered, then the trigger does not yield, does not mean that I am diminished by it anymore. I may still feel a wave of feeling, but I'm not diminished. My capacity for responding compassionately, for example, in a situation where someone is needing compassion, is not diminished. Or my ability to respond in a way that can actually be more curious about what's going on as opposed to being defended by what I'm experiencing is now available. Does that make sense? So that's it in a kind of a nutshell. Gloria was in the cue process, so she knows something about this.
It's always good to hear you outside of the milieu. Anyway, yeah, I just want to speak to that. And Larry's also has a Wednesday night. Is that Byron Katie you're doing on Wednesday? Lessons in Truth. Well, she has that too. Anyway, that Q process is incredible. And I certainly got to look at my shadow, my defensiveness. And it was really amazing. And it really goes along the line of Richard Rohr's true self, false self, I think. And it, anyway, back to consciousness. I wanted to ask you, and I don't know how to put it into words, but is there a way to be aware and conscious? But there's also the love side, and sometimes people are aware and conscious, but they're not loving. I'm thinking Christ brought that into the world, the joy and the love and peace. So I think you know something about that.
That's great. And, it gets tricky when you start thinking in terms of this and that. So when I'm in a state of just feeling like I'm about as pure, and I'm just in a pure awareness, when I'm just in my sense of being, there's no duality. So everything belongs, in some sense. Everything belongs. Everyone belongs. And in the presence of not wanting to push anything away, or not make anything wrong, because everything exists and is allowed to be as it is, that perhaps is the most pure kind of love. And I think then that consciousness then can use my gifts or my personality or everything that's particular to me or to you. And it's going to be different for every one of us. We're not all going to show up and look like, you know, Jesus or the Buddha or whatever. We're going to be who we are, but we're going to be coming from a baseline in which we are, we feel an essential oneness, and that's not a concept because it feels like there is only this ultimate reality. And we realize that we can allow what is natural to arise in this reality, and we can embrace it, and we can use all of our gifts and our creativity in order to foster what comes natural from a state of trusting in the infinite connection between all of life, which is going to be life-affirming, you know. It's going to be respectful. But not respectful from a concept. It's going to be respectful from, you know, this idea of you and I are one, you know. So I'm not going to have to think about should I be nice to you or not nice to you, because those two notions do not exist. There is only the one. And this is, I think, you know, morality kind of isn't even needed anymore. It's a natural morality. Because if I believe that you and I are one, I don't have to think about how I'm going to treat you, you know. Because how I treat you, I treat myself. There is only one. So I don't know if that makes sense, but it's less moralistic and ethical in a dualistic sense, and more moralistic and ethical in a non-dual sense, which is this natural arising of response, which is life-affirming, because there is only the one life. And that kind of sounds a little wooey-wooey, but that's how it's felt. Please do. Can you reach it?
I'll speak loud.
Yes. Come up if you can.
We had a speaker that perfectly embodies living from that awareness, that consciousness. And his name, it's a Catholic priest, and his name is Greg Boyle. He was here. When I first heard him speak at Congress, he blew my mind. He has spent his entire life with gangs in the worst ghetto in Los Angeles. And he looks at those boys with horrible tattoos and you wouldn't want to meet him in a dark corner. He has no fear, absolute love. He radiates love, and he has brought thousands of those kids to living a meaningful life, integrated in society. It's amazing. His life is a miracle, constantly happening. He never judges. He's just all loving. That's what he is. And the police department, they have a hard time with it. You know, they don't relate to this trust, and yet they are fascinated by it. So anyway, we had him here, and I think you know, you all felt it. That man comes from that awareness and the miracles that can come from it. Yeah. So anyway.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, I wish I had met this person. That's wonderful. Yeah, and we do know people that don't have to practice. They live it. Ah, beautiful, beautiful. Thank you. That's great.
May I read a poem? It's called Q and A. Q, when will it be enough? When will I have crossed enough rivers, climbed enough mountains, turned enough pages, heard enough words, mouthed enough prayers, wiped away enough tears, pulled enough chestnuts from the fire? How much is enough? When may I rest? A. When you have loved enough, enough to become love yourself, then you may rest. And when you have rested enough, then you can begin again.
Mm. Wow, that's beautiful. Where did that come from? Does it have an author? Or you wrote it? Thank you. That's lovely. Just now. Wonderful, wonderful. When you have loved enough. Yeah. Yeah. It's that paradox. It is in giving that you receive. And we think it's in getting. So it really, you know, the spiritual life, you know, it ultimately turns back on itself when it's really done correctly. And what you've been seeking, 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 looking, looking, wanting, trying to get, is within you. And it's turning awareness back on itself, really, that allows that to happen. And then I think that's where you find that kind of love, that amazing love. I mean, that capacity for love doesn't come from, you know, using the mind to kind of justify why people the way they are, and they're all just really good people, and, you know, they're all children of God, so I'm just going to see them as being perfect. I mean, you can't cognitively get there. There has to be some fundamental transformation, and it's going to be at the level of the heart. It's going to be some level of turning over all these questions to the ultimate answer, which is what you really created to be, what you already are. And I think we can practice, which is to love and to be as loving as we can. And I think that does give us feedback to what we are. And in that sense, it's good. Yes.
Thank you for coming. I just find something synchronistic here. The last chapter of the book is that we're saying goodbye to Thomas More here. This is the last day for him. But there's a section called the postlude in the back that's a great summary of the whole thing. And it talks about we're all mystics. But the thing that I wanted to point out that it was synchronistic is that he dedicated that particular chapter to a little poem by William Butler Yeats, who is a very famous Irish poet. it's kind of a downer because it goes back into the cloud of unknowing and being empty and the apocalypse and all. So, but I wanted to point out the postlude. There are wonderful suggestions in the postlude. We're all mystics.
We are. Thank you so much. That's great. That's good. Any other thoughts or questions or comments or insights. Yes.
I just want to say I really appreciate you saying this is where I am, this is my current view of how things are, or something like that, but it was the current.
Yeah.
I really appreciate it.
We do. Let's hope so, right? Yeah. I mean, I think probably the reason we suffer is that, you know, we cling to wanting to stay the same, or at least hearken to a time when things seem easier or whatever. But we are evolving and growing. It's natural and right.
I just wanted to say something that I went to a Buddhist retreat or seminar a day, and one of the things that we were asked to do it was to sit in small groups and ask ourselves, who are we or who are you without your story? And I'm going to tell you, that is a very frightening thing. And some women, it was a women's seminar, some women got up and walked out. They couldn't deal with thinking of themselves without their story. And so what's up with this going back to who you really are without all the falderal? Was really enlightening.
Yes, that's beautiful. Yeah, and that really is a really good practice. Because if someone says, "Who are you?" you would start telling your story, wouldn't you? Right. Well, I was born in Chicago, and da 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 da. And I mean, and that's who is the one who has been there to witness the story. That's the place we want to go. And that's a very, that's the field of unknowing, the cloud of unknowing. That's the unfamiliar aspect of identity. And yet it's the only thing that's actually been 100% who you are all along. You know, when you were 2 years old and that thing happened, and five when that experience was known, and then when you were 30, and then when you were married, and then when you had children, and then when someone died, and there was one that was there with you all that time. What is that? Who is that? What is that? That was always, and it's always the same one now. You could be 80 years old and it has no age on it, has no sense of age. It's just as alert and aware as it was when you were five. What is that? What witnesses life? What is that consciousness? What is that awareness? Is that the divine principle? Is that ultimately what you are beyond form? That preceded the body, the bodily birth, and lives on. That has no end game. There's no end to it. What is that? Quantum scientists are asking the question and wondering if it isn't this thing called consciousness. And mystics have been saying all along that that's what it is, and that's where we are one, and that's where we are one with God, and we are one with each other, and the each other meaning, various manifestations, but really in our oneness, there is nothing but this one life, energy, intelligence, love. And this is the alpha and the end game without end. Infinite and unknowable, as Thomas More says. Infinite and unknowable. But somehow you still know. Well, it's been really wonderful to be with you again. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thanks for hanging out. And look forward to perhaps another time, or come to Unity of Santa Barbara on a Sunday. We're there at 9:30 and 11:15. Blessings.